Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hello and welcome to the Forum Club, Talen Horton Tucker edition. I'm Bill Oram, joined by Anthony Slater. Slater, how's your trying to THT coming?
I am looking at the top 10 total point scorers of preseason so far. And do you want me to go? I'll go from the bottom to the top. Gary Trent Jr., 10. Kobe White, 9. And then we get into some bigger names. Ja Morant, 7. Harry Giles, 6. But Doncic, 5. Kyle Kuzma, actually, 4, which stuns me. but this is your top three. You ready for your top three? Number three, Devin Booker in 2 games, 43 points. Number two, Giannis Antetokounmpo, newly signed. By the way, we could get to that at some point. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 49 points in 2 games. And then the number one preseason scorer, Talen Horton Tucker, 52 points in 2 games. That's it. I mean, we were both on him early, like, you know, hey, you know, they should get him in the rotation this year, they should try some things, and he has not done anything in the regular season at this point, but I don't think either of us saw this coming in the preseason.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think we all, those of us who've paid close attention to this team, have listened to the way Frank Vogel has talked about Talen Horton Tucker, have kind of suspected that there was going to be a role for him, maybe not a nightly role, but that he was going to be kind of this weapon off the bench, and I still think that's probably his role going forward. But the fact that, like, he basically has been given a green light in the preseason and just was killing dudes. It's been really fun and entertaining. And, you know, I guess, you know, and I wrote this on Sunday night after the 33-point explosion. You know, a preseason performance really only matters in the context of what it means for the regular season and in the long term for, like, a player's career. Like, is what we're seeing from Talen Horton Tucker in the preseason of his second year indicative of what we might see from him in the regular season of his fourth year, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, I obviously no way of knowing, but I do think that, like, you can't have this dude playing 41 minutes in the preseason and scoring 33 points and then, you know, playing him 0 minutes throughout the regular season. Like, this guy is going to be a part of the Lakers rotation.
The Laker fan base might riot if Frank Vogel doesn't play the DNP in game one, right?
I mean, Frank talked about this after the game on Sunday also. Like, the thing that's going to work in Talen Horton Tucker's favor is that, you know, the Lakers, the teams are not going to be at full strength all that much this year. You know, the Lakers are probably going to be resting guys throughout the first half of the year. And then there's just the great unknown of the health and safety protocols and the coronavirus. You don't know when teams are going to have their players. And so, assuming good health for Talen Horton Tucker, you know, that's where opportunity may come from in a way that it wouldn't in a traditional year.
Well, help me map out his early month role. Who's he eating minutes from? I mean, we can get to
it's
Kuzma
hard.
Maybe, but, like, you know, and what do you view him long term? Like, is he a wing, or, like, he was playing kind of guard, like ball handling a little bit? I don't know.
He was the point guard for a lot of that second game against the Clippers, and that was not something that I don't think any of us saw coming. Now, knew he could be a playmaker, knew he could handle the ball, you know, really good with the ball in his hands, attacking the basket. So we knew all that was there, but, you know, the assists have been good. I thought he was good leading the fast break. So I think the fact that he maybe could be a bit of a ball handling wing makes him extremely useful, especially if Dennis Schroeder is going to start next to LeBron. The Lakers do not have a clear-cut backup point guard. You could argue Alex Caruso. You know, Quinn Cook is on the roster, but, you know, he was not in the rotation, you know, really in the second half of the year. So I'm not sure whether we should see him as a factor in a point guard discussion. You could have maybe Talen Horton Tucker and Alex Caruso on the floor, and they both are capable of being playmakers. Maybe that sort of solves the question of backup point guard.
The best play that I saw him make, maybe not best play, but like the one I was like, geez, was when like Kawhi squared him up and put the ball kind of in front of him. Talen Horton Tucker just ripped the ball from him.
Yes.
It was, and you know, we were talking offensively right now. Obviously, the guy had 35 or, you know, did more ball handling, playmaking than we thought, some initiating. But defensively, I mean, I'm not like, he didn't like stop Kawhi, and I don't expect him to be like a stopper. But like the fact that they're comfortable having him on Kawhi, and he is at least producing plays like that, where he's ripping the ball from the guy who usually rips the ball from you. It's some intriguing stuff that he just put on tape.
That was the play of the game to me as well. Like you said, there were tons of, you know, up and unders and spin moves and step backs, and you know, he shot 4 of 5 from three. But the fact that here's how he did it also, because Kawhi squared him up and Talen kind of swiped, and I felt like he just was able to loosen the ball just enough. And then, you know, his second effort on the ball was so good, he truly just ripped it out of Kawhi's hands, leads the fast break, then gets to the corner and knocks down a spot up three. Like, it was a sensational sequence for that guy. And, you know, defense is what's going to get him on the court. Like, the Lakers are not going to need him to be trying to go out and get 20. I think they're going to like his burst off the bench and like his ability to get to the rim and maybe generate some offense when the offense is lagging without LeBron. But I think it's going to be his defense, because you really can't play a guy like that if he's not going to be a plus defender for you. And what I thought, like, that sequence was encouraging. And one thing Frank Vogel said post game that I think, you know, if it doesn't tell you something about Talen Horton Tucker, it should at least tell you how Frank Vogel views him, because his comment post game was he's just as talented defensively as he is offensively. So while we're all gushing over the offense, if Frank thinks that he is just as good of a player defensively as he was offensively, and that play that you highlighted is a great example, then he's going to be on the court.
What's his wingspan? I mean, it seems like it's got to be ridiculous.
The internet is good for questions.
I know.
Like that.
I could have Googled that.
Clickety clack.
I'm guessing at least like 7'1".
Yeah, 7'1 is the answer.
7'1"? Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, that's typically leads to deflections and plays like he had on Kawhi. To me, the swing factor for him early in his career is going to be his 3-point shot. Because, look, LeBron James is in the rotation. Hey, Taylor, you're not scoring 35. You're not getting that many shots. You know, you're going to a lot of possessions if you're on the floor with LeBron. And I know, like, some of his appeal is that he'll be on the floor when LeBron's not on the floor. But if he is such a player that it's like he turns into, like, a must-play guy, you're going to have him on the floor with LeBron. And then for him to thrive in that situation, he's going to have to hit a spot-up threes. What do you think of his shot? And what kind of percentage of a three-point shooter do you think he can be?
I mean, if he shot 35% from three, I mean, he would be...
Oh, yeah, that would be great. Yes.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, you don't expect a second-year player who played 5 minutes in the NBA last year, you know, prior to the hiatus, to come in and be a 35% three-point shooter in his second year. Like, that would be a huge jump for him. And I'd have to go back and look and see what he shot in the G League last year, and maybe I'll do that. But
I'll do it. Keep going.
It looked good. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. Like, I mean, it did not. His mechanics look good. I mean, he's squared up. He's got a good base. And like, I mean, you see him knock down 4 of 5. I think he made 5 of 9 in the first two preseason games. So he's 1 of 4 in the first game.
So you ready? I got your answer.
Yeah. How bad is it?
Not great. 72 of 234, 30.8%, basically 31%. And we're talking about taking 7.4 a game, which I like. I do like the volume. It means they're really trying to, you know, get him reps. Yeah. 31 is, I mean, it could be improved. It could be worked with, but yeah, you would like to see that more towards 34, 35.
This gets into a different conversation, I think, but I believe that is better than what Kyle Kuzma shot from three last year.
Oh, no, it is. It is, because I remember...
Wasn't it? So it was sub 30, right? Like, it was 29.
Yeah, it was like 29-something on a lot of attempts, too.
Oh, hold on. I've got... You know what?
I don't want to keep slamming Kyle Kuzma. I did this all playoffs, right?
Let's be kind to Kyle Kuzma. I was incorrect. It was 31.6 over the course of the regular season for Kuz. 31.6 on 4.5 attempts.
Okay. All right. The wider scope view of this is like another big thing. Pelinka, you know, I mean, what pick was he? He was like 40 something.
46, I want to say. It was a draft night swap with Orlando. The Lakers didn't have a pick in the 2019 draft, and they acquired Talen Horton-Tucker in the second round. And you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, narrative drives so much of this, right? Talen Horton-Tucker, I mean, Slater, you are with all your focus on the Warriors, maybe you don't know this. Who is Talen Horton-Tucker's agent?
Do not know this.
The answer is Rich Paul and Clutch. So, you know, they pick him up late in the second round, and I think that there is sort of a narrative. It's like, of course the Lakers are going to draft the Clutch guy. And so, like, that is the thought more than, like, is he even good? And he was coming off of an injury last year. He wasn't ready. He didn't have a training camp. He would admit that he was out of shape. I mean, he was a you know, a kind of a beefy dude coming into training camp last year. And if the transformation I saw from him physically from the end of the, from the time the season was abruptly halted, you know, he was playing in the G League. He was playing a lot. You know, he was getting in shape, but he was still a bigger dude. When we saw him, what he looked like on the practice court immediately after the hiatus, it's a complete transformation. I mean, he looks like a different person because he lost the weight. He got a lot of definition in those 4 months. And you saw it. I mean, he got tons of opportunity in the bubble in the seeding games, which, I mean, were essentially a full preseason for him. I mean, those games did not matter to the Lakers. They clinched the one seed with their second game in the bubble or their second win in the bubble. And at that point, they're playing with house money and they let Talen Horton-Tucker go. And he had some really nice moments. And that gave Frank Vogel the confidence to play him in the playoffs. Not a lot, but I will always remember in the second game against Houston, second quarter, the Lakers were in an 0-1 hole in that series. It was a close game. Talen Horton-Tucker comes in and plays, I mean, you could check me on the numbers here, but like plays like 5 minutes and is a plus nine and scores 5 points. Or scores plays 7 minutes as a plus nine and scores 5 points.
I just remember how aggressive he was.
Completely swung the game.
I was like, this is first NBA minutes. Like he's, like you said, like not even a regular season factor last year. And usually you would expect a guy like that, even if he has the talent, to be like, my knees are shaking a little bit. Let me go over to the corner over here. Let me, I got the ball here. Let me pass it. Let me find the first pass so I get it off. No, he was like, I'm going to shoot. I'm going to take advantage of this opportunity. And Vogel sees it 1,000 times more than I do in practice. But even me seeing that, I was like, okay, there's something there. And I mean, again, we were having a conversation a few weeks ago, like, hey, they need to find a role for this guy. And clearly they think that too, which, and the other thing is these are such crucial marginal moves that push you into the next decade.
Yes.
Well, you know where like the LeBron Davis thing is gonna run its course at some point. You know, LeBron probably a little bit before Davis, but if you find guys at 44 that potentially, I mean, if you find a role player at 44, that's a huge hit. If you find something more, and I am not ready to say that. Nobody should be ready to say that yet, but it's possible. And like, that's huge.
It's one of those things where it's like the Lakers are so veteran. They don't have, young guys. They don't have much of a pipeline at this point. You know, they didn't have a pick last year. They traded, or excuse me, this most recent year, they traded their first round pick in the deal for on Dennis Schroeder. And so, to have a guy like that, that you can kind of take a flyer on and develop. And by the way, like, credit to Rob Pelinka. Obviously he's the one with his finger on the button, but the Lakers have been doing this for almost the entire decade. When you go back and you look at some of the picks they've made, Ivica Zubats was a second round pick. Isaac Bonga was a second round draft pick. Sfi Mikhailiuk, who's playing in Detroit, was a second round pick. Back into the first round, Josh Hart, Kyle Kuzma, Larry Nance Jr., Jordan Clarkson was a second round pick. The Lakers have been doing this, and I think credit has to be given to the scouting staff, which is of course led by Jesse Buss. They've done a good job kind of all around the world with their scouting in the late round. I don't know how many teams. I mean, it would almost be worth, and maybe I'm giving myself a story idea here, but if you looked at every team's second round picks dating back to 2012, what team has produced the most value from those second round picks? I think it could be the Lakers.
Well, I mean, it depends on how you define value, because I mean, Nuggets getting Jokic, at 41 or whatever they got him, I mean, if you get a all-star center, that's like almost trumps even just getting
like eight role players.
Yeah, eight role players. You know, the Warriors got Draymond in the second round. So I mean, there are some like grand slam picks that that kind of trump just, you know, hitting small singles. But still, that's very important. Like, the, you know, the singles are huge. And, you know, it also, there's the idea of Rob Pelinka as the lucky GM that LeBron chose. There's the idea of Rob Pelinka as the big city GM whose talent is to say, hey, come to LeBron, come to the big city, come enjoy LA. And look, like you detailed, this is not just, you know, we sometimes say the GM and don't credit everyone under the GM that is doing a lot of the grunt work here. But this, I mean, this is Rob Pelinka's team doing stuff that, you know, the San Antonio Spurs love to try to do, right?
Yep.
You know, find a prospect and develop him. You know, it's important for the Lakers' future.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that that's one thing that the Lakers have been consistently good at, even through the years that they were bad. And it has transcended, you know, who was the president of basketball operations or the GM. And that is how you build, I think, over time. And listen, you know, this is not unique to the Lakers, but I mean, look at the roster. Look at how many guys the Lakers could be leaning on who were fringe NBA prospects. Wesley Matthews was undrafted. Alex Caruso was undrafted. Marc Gasol was the 48th pick. Talen Horton-Tucker was the 46th pick. Are there others here? There probably are. And then you've got
your two number ones.
You've got two number ones to build around. I mean, that's the amazing thing. So Talen Horton-Tucker is, you know, it's a surprise because we hadn't seen this from him yet, and it's a surprise because relative to his draft position and all that. But I mean, there is tons of precedent even on this roster that, you know, players who don't come into the league as heralded, you know, stars, you know, with patience and good development can really become factors. And it seems like Talen Horton-Tucker is on that path.
You know, Lakers fans may not want to hear it right at this exact moment, but he also becomes a trade piece potentially.
Absolutely.
Too, you know, absolutely. That's an asset if they feel like come deadline time that, you know,
he might have more trade value right now than Kyle Kuzma.
Oh, definitely. Especially when you consider the contract situations, there's so much cheap team control on Horton-Tucker right now, whereas Kuzma is walking into what he believes is going to be. I don't know how much trade value Kuzma does have right now because he's at the end of that rookie deal and you know what his financial desires are. That is a good flip. What have you thought of Kuzma through two preseason games?
You know, it's interesting because going into two preseason games where we knew LeBron and Anthony Davis were not going to play, I kind of expected Kuzma to do what THT has done. Like, I thought he was going to have the ball in his hands and just go ham. And I actually, you know, he hasn't. Like, I mean, you highlighted the fact that he's scored the ball pretty well. I think he's played more within himself in this preseason than I expected. You know, how has he shot the ball? I mean, I think he has been...
I'm looking it up right now. Okay, go ahead.
I feel like he's been fairly consistent. He's been...
13 of 30, which is not good, but 6 yeah. of 13 from 3, which is very good.
Right.
But, I mean, you flip side that, what would that make him? 7 of 17 on 2s, which is not great, so...
Yeah. I think he's been good. I mean, it's like, I think he has not done anything to make me think that, like, his head is not in the right place. Like, I mean, he's made a couple defensive plays. Like you've said, he's knocked down some 3s. To me, it's like the fact that he didn't come out and try to put up 50 points each game is encouraging. Cause I think that's kind of always the fear with a player like Kyle Kuzma, who wants to be more involved in the offense maybe than he is because of the personnel on the team, that when, you know, those guys weren't there, he still tried to do the right thing. So I've actually been pleasantly surprised by Kuzma in the preseason.
They're plus 30 with him on the floor in the two games too.
It's very peculiar because like everyone's numbers look really good in these first two games because they beat the snot out of the Clippers twice.
I don't want to go on too big of a tangent here. Clippers have looked kind of dull. I mean, the Clippers played, you know, Kawhi. They played Paul George. I mean, in no way, like, in regular season minute totals and, like, ferocity. But, you know, I kind of was expecting the Clippers to be the more motivated team. I've been, like, thinking I'm going to pick the Clippers to win the title. And, I mean, this shouldn't change that necessarily. But, you were in the building, which, by the way, we should get to you being in the
sure.
building. But what have you thought about the Clippers?
Just listless. Not very motivated. you know, which I think is fine in the preseason, but like you are playing your guys. Like I would expect that the Kawhi and Paul George minutes to be a little more focused. And it really just kind of felt like they were just out there. And so there was a play where, was it Kawhi like tried to pass the ball, like bring the ball up the court to Serge Ibaka, and it just bounces off of Serge's chest. Like
Serge is looking at the moon, basically.
Yeah, I just feel like there's work to be done there on getting those guys all on the same page, and that's why you're playing them now. And so I'm going to be curious to see what they look like on opening night, because I expect the Clippers to come out, you know, really, really trying to make a statement against the Lakers. And maybe that's part of why they have been kind of the way they've been in these first two preseason games. You know, there's going to be a lot of intersections between these two teams going forward. And, you know, especially if you're the Clippers and you are suddenly the hunter, you don't maybe want to play, you know, reveal anything like at all in these games. So I think maybe the Clippers were happy to, you know, get walked all over by the Lakers in two meaningless preseason games. Just let Kawhi try to like get his feet under him and then move on. But I really, if we are assuming that you can glean anything from the preseason, which I think is a big assumption, I was not impressed by the Clippers.
What was your experience going to Staples, an empty Staples Center?
Yeah, so I mean, my first time seeing live basketball since March 10th when the Lakers lost to Brooklyn. You know, I didn't go to the bubble. I wasn't in Orlando for any of that. And it was unique. It's eerie. I mean, there's sound that's piped in, but it's kind of faint and it's kind of, you know, muffled. But it was interesting. I mean, it's interesting to see the guys interact, you know, try to make their own energy. But then pretty quickly it becomes kind of the norm. You know, you walk in, you go to your seat, you sit 8 feet apart from anyone else. There's outdoor pregame dining, which you can do in Southern California. I don't know what they're doing about that in other less climate friendly markets. But, you know, it was a really straightforward experience. I mean, you kind of expect to walk in and for like, you know, I don't know, like this light beam to go off and be like, this is so different. And really, it's just it's like being at a shoot around almost, where you're in the empty arena and it's starkly different at first, but then you just kind of grow accustomed to the surroundings. Did you go to the first Warriors game?
I didn't. I opted against it just for, you know, I'm be around some family in the holidays, and I'm going to wait till the Warriors home. They start on the road for four, so they're not opening till January 1st. So I'm going to wait till their 7-game homestand then. But I was actually just recently on a podcast with all our Warriors guys who did go, and, you know, rapid tests that took apparently 37 minutes for, you know, that's how long Ethan said his took. You didn't have to test to go in, right? That's just a Warriors thing.
I would like to. You know, I think I saw Malika Andrews tweeted that they're doing the same thing in Brooklyn, you know, just for my own peace of mind and, you know, having information. You know, I would love to get tested to go into the arena each game.
Come to a Lakers Warriors road game and you can.
Maybe I will. Maybe I'll just road trip it with Wojcie, windows down the whole way.
You know, speaking of Wojcie, are people on the beat traveling much? Like, I'm not going to the first Warriors road trip because it's on Zoom.
Because it would be absolute lunacy. It would be unsafe. Yes, I agree with all of that. No, I don't think anyone on the Lakers beat is planning on regular travel. For listeners who are like, why wouldn't you go to the games? I mean, all of our post game interviews are still going to be on Zoom. Our, you know, shoot around availabilities are still going to be on Zoom. So the one advantage is to be able to be in the arena, which is a great privilege that I don't take lightly. But you know, it's a lot of travel, it's a lot of expense, and certainly exposure. You know, in the middle of a pandemic, when you know the only advantage is being able to see the game in person. When you know. You will see 95% of what you see in the arena from your television. Unfortunately, that's the case. Like the advantage to being on the road has always been being in a locker room, being able to interact with players, build relationships with players, have, you know, one-on-one conversations.
And it's not even just players, like team staff, front office, people that are lingering around pregame. It was funny, and I know this because I didn't go, but I had some people hit me up like, hey, are you in the building? We're not allowed, you know, and this is like, The team staffers were not allowed to come up to the media level.
Correct.
Even if they wanted to come chat, they're not allowed to interact with us just because of, I guess, the, you know, obviously fear you know, this is all about spreading and everything. But where do they sit you in Staples?
So we are kind of the middle of the 100 level, which is where like the ADA seating has been. And so it's, you know, it's a decent seat. I mean, you know, it's probably on par with where a lot of teams seat us, you know, on the road in a normal year. So the view of the court is great. I mean, actually, we've been in two different places. The first two games, we were kind of between the baskets on the other side of the benches in game one. And then in game two, they had us above the tunnel behind the Lakers bench, which gave a different sort of point of view. It's a different vantage point. You know, I like being behind the bench because you can see the interactions between the players and staff on the bench. And that is the thing. That is one of the big things that you don't get watching the game on television, because you might be trying to see what's happening on the bench as the camera pans the other way following the ball. So, I mean, that's one of the real advantages, is being able to watch something that is not what the broadcast is focused on.
Yeah. We should probably flip it back to like basketball. Anything more you want to say on Kuzma, or is there another player that stuck out to you?
No, I mean, the Kuzma thing, I think, is what we've been saying for a few weeks, which is just such a make or break year for him. And, you know, he has a lot on the line, you know, in terms of his contract, in terms of his reputation. You know, I'm sure if he was being honest, he doesn't love that Talen Horton-Tucker is like suddenly this breakout player who kind of plays at least one of his positions and is doing a lot of the things that people look to Kyle Kuzma to do. But I mean, Kyle Kuzma is still going to have a big role on this team and plenty of opportunity. So I just think it's going to have to be something we monitor over the course of the regular season, and especially up to the trade deadline. Like you said, probably not a ton of value, but if the Lakers are trying to flip for something to bolster their roster, I mean, I don't think Talen Horton-Tucker is untradeable, but the Lakers are going to be trying to make moves around the fringes of their roster, and I don't think they want to trade a 20-year-old with that much talent and that kind of wingspan.
Yeah, no. So the, I guess, player or I guess thing I saw in the two preseason games that stuck out to me most, Marc Gasol's passing.
Yes.
Really good.
My favorite thing.
Just, you know, those like high posts spinning around a defender, and the way you can weave around him and almost use him in dribble handoff situations. And that's the thing with it. You know, we talk about him aging and, you know, maybe injury prone, you know, where are the knees going to be at, blah, blah, blah. The passing's always going to be there, because that's a brain thing and that's a size thing. And he's going to have the size and the arms and the brain to do that forever, really, probably into his 50s. So I'm just, again, a lot of this is hard to calculate into a real Lakers environment, because that's a Anthony Davis on the floor, LeBron James on the floor. How many times are they going to give it to Marc Gasol in the high post? A lot less, I assume. But that's something Dwight Howard was certainly not doing last year.
Yeah, I mean, you're spot on. I mean, watching him operate out of the high post, I mean, it's just it's like a quarterback. I mean, the comparison gets made too often, and it's a little trite. But you know, he was so patient on those cuts. Like he waits just the perfect timing on all those. Lets the plays develop. Lets his cutters you know get backdoor. I mean, it was really impressive to watch how much he really does run the offense from out of that high post position. I mean, he had 5 assists in, I think, like 20 minutes in the preseason game that he played in. And, you know, passing is timeless. You know, you do not need to be quick. You do not need to be agile. You do not need to be athletic. You don't need to be particularly mobile. You need to be smart. You need to be, you know, as everyone likes to say, on time, on target. And he is that. And, you know, when you look at what he's going to be able to do as he ages, and some of the mobility that he had maybe starts to fade, pass the ball, shoot threes, be in the right place defensively. That's really all. Those are the three things you need him to be able to do. Set screens. And I don't see those things going away. So I think, yes, there is a bit of a risk, you know, on a 36-year-old just inherently. But, you know, the way he plays has aged very well. You know, I think he averaged like 7 points a game last year with the Raptors. That's not what he does anymore. But the things that will make him useful to the Lakers are not scoring the basketball. So he will create offense without having to score the ball himself.
True, but those, you know, and yes, the passing is such a massive upgrade over what JaVale and Dwight gave.
I don't remember JaVale and Dwight passing. Like if JaVale and Dwight were passing, something had had broken down in the offense, because they should be only touching the ball on lobs. That's when they should be touching the ball.
You know, Marcus's flaws are in areas that JaVale and Dwight did help. And Marcus's only taken 4 shots so far. He took 1-3 and missed it.
Yeah.
What did you think about the rest of his game? I know he didn't play much, but
he had one nice move in the post on the fast break where he got to the block. I'm trying to remember who it was who got him the ball, but there was a nice feed into the post, and you know, the footwork was really good, and I remember just being really impressed with how he created space for himself and then scored on like a little baby hook. So I mean, I for some reason that play jumps out to me. I don't have great recollections of him defensively in that game. Maybe you took some notes on that. I didn't. But to me, it was really the passing. I mean, that was what I saw. I thought he looked good. I thought he was moving well. I thought he was running well. He looked like Marc Gasol to me. And I guess that is the most important thing. You don't want to replace Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee with the shell or the husk of Marc Gasol. If you're replacing them with Marc Gasol, you take the trade-offs. If you are getting, if you're trading off the athleticism and the above the rim and the shot blocking for a diminished version of Marc Gasol, that's where I'd be worried. And again, extrapolating anything out of 20 preseason minutes is a fool's errand. But he looked healthy, he looked spry, and to me, he looked like Marc Gasol. And that's all you can really ask for.
Yeah, and his defense will mostly be tested and needed against different teams. You know, the Nuggets when they play Jokic and some of the other bigger centers in the league. Zubac is, you know, he's solid, he's big, he's sturdy, but you know, he's not a 25 point per game type threat. The stat that just absolutely pops off the page, Montrezl Harrell had 32-23 in 58 minutes. He looked better than he did in the bubble. I mean, this is a guy who those numbers were routine last regular season. They weren't in the bubble. He looked a little bit out of shape in the bubble. There was personal stuff he was dealing with. There was internal stuff the Clippers were dealing with. But I would say a mildly encouraging start for Montrezl.
Yeah, I mean, he played a lot. I was surprised he played as much as he did. He was everything that you expect him to be. I mean, he's, scoring on floaters. He's getting into the basket. He's snaring rebounds. His effort just stands out. It stands out in the regular season, but even more starkly in the exhibition season when, you know, a lot of the guys you're going to see in the regular season maybe aren't giving 100%. Montrezl Harrell's giving 100%. That is the way he is wired. And so it was, and the Lakers haven't had that kind of guy, a guy who just is, a ball of energy and is going to go out and, especially at that position, and is going to go, climb the ladder for rebounds. It's just a little bit of a game changer for them on the energy and sort of roster composition front. I thought he looked, he missed some bunnies at the basket. Those floaters always feel kind of like a 50-50 proposition, especially in the preseason. They dance around on the rim, might fall in, might fall off. But, he looked good. He was, he was obviously out in transition, got a couple of nice fast break dunks. He looked like Montrezl Harrell. And, I just am still interested to see how that looks when the Lakers are at strength. What lineups is he playing in? Who is he playing alongside? Is he playing next to LeBron? Is he playing next to AD? What does that look like? Hopefully we'll find out over these next 2 preseason games. Obviously the Lakers play the next 2 in Phoenix. So I won't be there. I will be testing my theory that watching it on TV, you see almost as much as in person. LeBron and AD are going to play some in game 1 against Phoenix on Wednesday, and then they're going to play a lot more on Friday. And I think Friday is when we're going to start to get a sense of what some of these combinations might look like. By the way, I do want to say, going back to the first game, we saw a lot of that Schroeder-Harrell pick and roll. They both started that first game against the Clippers. So early on in that game, we saw a lot of that. And I thought that looked really good. It was kind of what we expected, but that looked really good.
Yeah, the only thing I don't like about Schroeder's brief appearance, only played 24 minutes, 6 turnovers in 24 minutes. And, that's those high usage bench guards, although it doesn't want to be a bench guard, high usage starting point guards.
Yeah.
They can be turnover prone, which is fine. I mean, they're kind of high risk, high reward.
First preseason game, no LeBron. I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into that. But yes, if you're going to have turnovers with Dennis Schroeder, and something like that is only going to be heightened in a preseason game where he's going to be handling the ball even more than he might in a lineup with LeBron. And when he's like, there's nobody else here, I'm going to go get mine. So yeah, some turnovers.
Any other guy that stood out to you? I mean, Wes Matthews was kind of, I thought, you know, pretty bland minutes. I mean, you know, they actually, you know, I'm looking at the plus minus, the minus nine in Wes Matthews minutes and two easy wins. So not that, again, this is such a tune-up time for vets, you know, just like, let's get on the floor. Let me get my wind a little bit. Let me float over here, over there. So I'm not sitting here judging anything from a small, brief Wes Matthews example. But what do you – I mean, like, is there anything up and down this roster that we haven't talked about that stood out to you in the preseason?
You know, I mean, I guess we really need to acknowledge the fact that, you know, on Sunday the Lakers didn't have Kostas Antetokounmpo or Devontae Kaycock. Those are their two-way players. They were both out and not in the arena. You know, team calls it an excused absence. Frank Vogel acknowledged that's because of the health and safety protocols of the league. It just sets the stage a little bit for what this is going to be like. You know, those guys played on Friday night, and all of a sudden on Sunday they're unavailable. And, you know, we don't know if that means that they have tested positive or if they had a prolonged exposure to someone who has tested positive, I think is one of the other circumstances where a player would be taken out of, out of the equation. And it doesn't totally, I mean, it certainly matters on a personal and human level, but, you know, from a basketball standpoint, it's just indicative of what this season is going to be like and how much you're going to see things like that. It almost was, you know, just from the perspective of getting used to that, it was almost a useful trial run with those two guys. I certainly hope they're okay and that their families are healthy, but to almost get acclimated to the situation we're in, where, you know, everything seems fine and all of a sudden you've got two players who aren't there. I mean, next time it could be rotation players. It could be guys whose absence you really feel and notice. Like, we just aren't going
to
know.
The Warriors just dealt with it. You know, they get to camp and then suddenly it's like, the starting power forward / leader of the team, Draymond,
is not here.
And the rookie center, who they just drafted number 2 overall, who every single person in the Warriors world right now is like, has their eyes looking at, like, how good is this kid going to be? He doesn't even practice the first 5 days, doesn't play in the preseason opener. He practiced, but there's the crazy thing about this, getting out of, you know, quarantine, that doesn't just mean you're out of quarantine, you're playing tomorrow. There's like a really, there's another, what I'm finding out, like 7 days and all these check marks you need to hit. They're not even playing in tonight's preseason game, and there's a thought that they might not play a minute in the preseason. So this really does put guys out a while. And, you know, and that's even with, I'm talking about two guys with no symptoms and like no complications. Yeah. You look down in Orlando, Mo Bamba, he still might not play from complications from when he got it back, like around the bubble time. So
yeah,
it's weird.
Yeah. I mean, I think that those are the big takeaways of the preseason. You know, Alex Caruso, I don't feel like I need to see a lot from Alex Caruso in the preseason. I think we kind of know what he is going to be for this team. But, you know, that's a guy who, if Talen Horton-Tucker is going to play, like, probably bites into a little bit of Caruso's minutes. And, you know, this is something we've all been doing. You know, in the preseason, I did a little exercise in The Athletic where I tried to formulate a rotation for this Lakers team. And I hate doing that because it suggests that I have any idea how to build an NBA rotation, which I will not put on my resume as a strength or skill. But it is a useful exercise because you know who's going to play minutes. You know Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is going to be north of 25 minutes. You know Wesley Matthews is going to be on the court for, you know, a decent chunk of time. You know LeBron and AD. Even if you try to shave a couple minutes off because of the short offseason, they're going to be on the court. And you play the guys you expect to play and maybe try to keep guys around their season average from a year ago. Good luck finding time for somebody like Talen Horton-Tucker. I found 8 minutes for him, like in two chunks, like in the second and third quarters. But that meant Wesley Matthews was only playing 19 minutes. That meant Alex Caruso's minutes from last year dipped from 18 to 15. So it gets complicated. And I think that's what I'm going to be interested to see. You know, I don't think Frank Vogel is going to have an 11-man rotation at the start of the season. But what you're going to see those guys play, whether it's based on matchups or rest or the health and safety protocols. Like, you are going to see a lot of Talen Horton-Tucker for a variety of reasons this year. You're going to see a lot of Markieff Morris for a variety of reasons this year. Sometimes it's because it's a good two-man pairing or it's a matchup that makes sense. Other times it's going to be because the guy he's backing up isn't there.
Before we get out of here, I wanted to ask you about the LeBron Davis plan moving forward. Obviously, neither plays in the first two preseason games. What do you expect in the, you know, I assume they're going to at least dip their toes in the water in these Phoenix games. And then are they, you know, opening night, are they 35 minutes and it's full go? Or is that basically preseason game one for them is opening night and they're going to play like 20 minutes?
So they're going to play a little bit against Phoenix on Wednesday there, and they're going to play what Frank said was like basically get them as close as possible to a regular season sort of scenario in the second game on Friday. But to me, you can't start the season, national TV game, ring ceremony, even in a weird year, national TV, big time kickoff. LeBron's going to play his minutes. AD is going to play his minutes in that game. And they'll probably play their minutes on Christmas in the second game. It's after that, and I'm not even sure which of the next games are on national TV. Probably some of them are. But it's Portland, Minnesota, then two against San Antonio, two against Memphis. I think in that scenario, you're going to start seeing those guys either way pull back on minutes or, you know, play one of two. Play one of the two in San Antonio. Play one of the two in Memphis. Maybe you're alternating who is out on a given night. What really struck me was that on Sunday, Frank Vogel was asked, you know, how much LeBron and AD were doing and how ready they could be by the season opener. And Frank said, you know, they're doing everything in practice. They look great. They're not ready for the regular season now, but they will be. And I'm sitting there, you know, and, you know, we're all dealing with the realities of this timeline. It's like, so that's 8 days, maybe three or four practices and two preseason games. Like, how realistically can they get ready? And what does ready mean? Like, that's a very subjective thing. Like, is LeBron in good enough shape to go play 35 NBA minutes right now? Almost certainly. Like, would he want to play game seven of the NBA finals and play 48 minutes right now? That's a different equation. But can he go play 35 regular season minutes? I would submit yes. But so I think there's going to be a build, but I don't think that it's going to look like, you know, 20 minutes in game one. I think that they are going to come out and play a real NBA basketball game on the 22nd.
Opening night's going to be a good night of TV. It's Warriors-Nets in Brooklyn, Durant against his former team, and then followed by, like you said, ring night, Lakers-Clippers. It's good scheduling by the NBA, I think.
It's almost like they design it for drama.
For ratings.
You're saying they want people to watch their product.
I'm curious to see the ratings were such a story out of the bubble that kind of disappointing.
Sure.
I'm curious to see the opening night ratings to see, you know, because I do, like, that's the right matchup, right? You know, you do have kind of like you're bringing that Warriors brand back even without Klay, and then you're bringing what NBA fans love, which is like a little bit of the personal drama, you know, Durant and the team with that he had the bad breakup with.
Sure.
And then followed by, you know, obviously your ratings king in LeBron. So I'm curious what the numbers are out of that.
You know, it's interesting. The schedule, I don't know if we ever did a podcast on schedule, but I wasn't sure who they were going to open with. I kind of thought they'd play the Clippers on Christmas, just from a, I don't know, a human standpoint. I think it makes more sense to keep two teams at home on Christmas. I think that should be the case every year. But the Lakers beat the Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals, and that's kind of where you often see the league start a regular season, you know, with maybe a matchup from the previous conference finals, you know, for the defending champions, you know. And all respect to the Nuggets, you know, that was a good series. That is a good team. They are contenders once again, but nobody cares to watch Lakers Denver on opening night. Like the one that's going to have buzz and juice is LeBron v Kawhi, AD, you know, Paul George. That's where the storylines are. So the league, like you said, good scheduling.
Yeah, and then they went a little quirky on Christmas. Warriors are in Milwaukee and then Dallas in L.A. But you know what I think that is? Luka. Luka, I think they're seeing what Luka is becoming, and I think they want to showcase him.
Yeah, it's the existing face of the league versus, you know, the future face of the league. I think that, you know, there is an awareness, you know, especially in the global game of basketball, that Luka is going to be certainly a pillar of what this league is, you know, over the next decade. And I think that matchup says a whole lot about Luka, how the league views him, and what kind of star the league wants him to be.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to the Forum Club. I am Bill Oram. Thanks, as always, to Anthony Slater for being my jousting partner on a variety of topics. We'll find out next week if we are still talking this much about Talen Horton-Tucker after two more preseason games. So we'll be back. You know, subscribe and tell your friends to listen to the Forum Club. Subscribe to The Athletic. Read our stories. And we'll be back next week and every week. Thanks for listening.